back in her chair, ready to maybe send a message to Hunt to feel out whether he was still pissed. But all plans vanished at the sight of the envelope on her desk. It contained an analysis of Dragonfire, dating back 5,000 years. It was in a language Bryce didn't know, but a translation had been included. Jessica had scribbled, "Good luck," at the top. Well, now she knew why the astronomer kept Ariadne in a ring. Not for light, but for protection. Among its many uses, the ancient scholar had written, Dragonfire is one of the few substances proven to harm the princes of hell. It can burn even the prince of the pit's dark hide. Yeah, Ariadne was valuable, and if Apollyon was readying his armies, Bryce had no intention of letting the dragon return to the astronomer's clutches. Chapter 51. Hunt knew he'd been a fool to think this would end once they found Emil, once the kid was safe. Bryce clearly had no intention of dropping this, not with Danica somehow involved. But he tucked all that aside. He had other shit to take care of right now. He had to meet with Celestina first, make an appearance, maintain the facade that all was well, ensure that the Hind hadn't told the Archangel anything. His meeting with Isaiah wasn't for an hour, plenty of time. Plenty of time to also stew over Bryce, and how well she'd played all of them. How she'd helped Emil, but she'd hidden her plans from him. Plans that had cost lives. And yeah, Bryce could take care of herself, but he'd thought they were a team. Again, he knew he'd been a fool. Hunt soothed his wild blood, and only when he was certain his lightning wasn't about to erupt did he knock on the governor's door. Celestina smiled in greeting, a good sign. No hint of Ephraim or the others, good as well. Her smile widened as Hunt stepped closer. "Congratulations," she said warmly. Hunt angled his head. "On what?" she gestured to him. "I take it from your scent that you and Bryce are mated." He hadn't realized the sex would be broadcast like that. Apparently the bond between them had gone to that biological level.
Yeah, since the overnight at her parents' house.
Even if they'd just been at each other's throats, and not in the good way.
"So visiting her parents went well, then?"
I thought her mom would cut off my balls at one point, but get Ember talking about Sunball, and she'll become your best friend.
It was true, though he'd learned it months ago. Even if some part of him recoiled at having to answer Celestina's question with a blatant lie. Celestina laughed merrily. There was no wariness or displeasure in it, no indication that she might know the truth.
"Good. I'm happy for you. For both of you."
"Thank you," Hunt said. He added, to cover his bases, "Rune and Prince Cormac joined us, though. It made things slightly awkward."
"Because Cormac is technically Bryce's fiancé?"
Celestina asked wryly. Hunt snorted.
"That too, but mostly because Ember isn't a fan of the Fae. She asked Rune to come since she hadn't seen him in years, but it was still tense at times."
"I've heard of her history with the Autumn King. I'm sorry that it still haunts her."
"So am I," Hunt said. "Anything happen here while I was gone?"
"Only if you count overseeing party preparations for the equinox."
Hunt chuckled.
"That fun, huh?"
"Riveting,"
Celestina said, then seemed to remember herself because she added,
"Of course, it's for a joyous occasion, so it's not entirely a chore."
"Of course."
The sun through the windows behind her turned her white wings radiant.
"Baxian might have something more interesting to report. He was barely here yesterday."
It took all of Hunt's training to keep his own face neutral as he said,
"I've got a meeting with Isaiah, but my next stop after that is to check in with him."
Everything between them was a lie, and one word from the Hind. Hunt suppressed the surge of his power as it crackled through him.
Paxian might have claimed he was a rebel sympathizer, might have helped them enough to garner some trust, but he'd be a fool to trust him entirely.
What's wrong? Celestina asked, brow furrowing with worry.
Hunt shook his head. Nothing. He clasped his hands behind his back and asked casually, anything for me to do today?
Hunt emerged from the Archangel's office 5 minutes later with a stack of preliminary reports on demon activity at the Northern Rift. She wanted his expertise in examining the types of demons caught, as well as an analysis on whether the breeds and frequency meant Hell was planning something. The answer was a definite yes, but he'd find some way to draw out the task to buy himself more time, to decide how much to tell her about Hell. Apollyon had spoken true about him and Bryce and their powers, and if the Prince of the Pit had been honest about that, what else had he been honest about? Some shit with Hell was stirring. Hunt's gut twisted. But he still had one more thing to do before descending into all of that. He hunted down the Hind in 10 minutes, finding her in the barracks bathroom, applying red lip liner of all things. He'd never thought she might actually have to put on her makeup. Somehow, he pictured her permanently coiffed and painted.
Hunter,
she crooned without breaking her stare from the mirror. They were alone.
Don't call me that.
You never did like Sandriel's nickname for you.
I had no interest in being part of her club.
The Hind kept drawing her lip liner with a steady hand.
To what do I owe this pleasure?
Hunt leaned against the bathroom door, blocking any exit. She slid a coal-lined eye in his direction.
What are you going to do about what happened yesterday?
He asked. She opened a tube of lipstick and began filling in the precise outline she'd drawn.
If you're referring to when I fucked Pollux in the showers, I'm afraid I'm not going to apologize to Naomi Boreas for leaving the stall door open. I did invite her to join, you know.
That's not what I'm talking about.
She started on her top lip.
Then enlighten me.
Hunt stared at her.
She'd seen him, spoken to him, to all of them, while they'd been in the water. He'd gone ballistic, ready to slaughter her, had needed his mate's touch and body to calm down afterward.
Hunt growled.
Is this some sort of cat and mouse game?
She set the golden lipstick tube on the counter and pivoted, beautiful and cold as a statue of Luna.
You're the hunter, you tell me.
This female had killed Sophie Renast, drowned her, and had tortured so many others that the silver torque around her neck practically screamed the names of the dead. When Hunt said nothing, the Hind inspected herself in the mirror, tucking a stray tendril of hair into her elegant chignon. She then stalked toward him, to the door. He stepped away silently. The Hind said as she exited,
Perhaps you'll stop prattling on about nonsense once you see what the Harpy did by the Angel's Gate. It's rather extraordinary.
10 minutes later, Hunt learned what she meant. The crystal gate in the heart of the CBD was muted in the mid-morning light, but no one was looking at it anyway. The gathered crowd was snapping pictures and murmuring about the two figures lying face down on the ground beneath it. It had been a long while since Hunt had seen anyone blood-eagled. The corpses wore black stealth clothes, or shreds of them. Rebels. That was the Ophian crest on their red armbands, and the sinking sun of the Lightfall Squadron above it. Across the gate square, someone vomited, then sprinted away, crying softly. The Harpy had started down their backs, taken her knives and sawed through the ribs, cleaving each bone from the spine. And then she'd reached through the incisions and yanked their lungs through them, leaving a pair of bloody wings draped over their backs. Hunt knew the victims would have still been alive, screaming. Ephraim had brought this into his city. This was what the Hind, the Asteri, would unleash upon him and Bryce. It wouldn't be crucifixion. It'd be something far more creative. Had the Harpy left the Blood Eagles as a message for Ophian,
or for all of Valbara. Celestina had allowed this to happen here, allowed the Harpy to do this and then display the bodies, hadn't even mentioned it in their meeting. Because she agreed with these methods, or because she had no choice? Hunt swallowed against the dryness in his mouth, but others had noticed him now. The Umbra Mortis, they murmured, like he'd helped the Harpy create this atrocity. Hunt swallowed his answer. We might be Triari, but I will never be like that monster. They wouldn't have believed him. It had been a weird fucking day, but Rune heaved a sigh of relief when Athalar called. All clear, the angel had said, and it had eased Rune's exhaustion and dread, if only by a fraction. He hadn't told Athalar about the sprites and the dragon. He'd let Bryce tell her mate those details. He wondered if she'd even told him yet about the mystics. Rune toyed with his lip ring as he returned to the living room, where Flynn was flirting with the sprites while Deck asked them questions about their lives in the rings. The dragon sat on the stairs, and Rune ignored her, even if it went against every primal instinct to do so. Ethan lifted his brows as Rune entered. We're good, Rune told the males, who all muttered prayers of thanks to the gods. He faced the dragon, bracing himself, but was interrupted by the sound of the doorbell. Brows lowering, hand drifting to the gun tucked into his back waistband, Rune strode to the front door. A lovely familiar female scent hit him, a moment before he registered who stood there, broom in hand. Queen Hypaxia Enador smiled faintly. Hello, Prince. I'd hoped to find you here. Chapter 52 Therian finished his report to the River Queen, his fin holding him steady in the current of the river depths. She lounged among a bed of river oysters, long fingers trailing over the ridges and bumps. So, my sister has a fleet of ships that elude the Asteri's Omega boats. The waters around them swirled, and Therian fought to keep in place, tail swishing hard. Only six.
Six, each one the size of the Comitium.
Her eyes flashed in the dim depths. Does it make a difference? He'd had no choice but to tell her everything. It was the only way to explain why he'd returned without Pippa Spetsos in tow, or at least answers regarding Emil Renast's whereabouts.
Do sisters not share everything?
She dragged a finger along the jagged edge of an oyster, and it opened, revealing the pearl within.
They mock me with these ships. They suggest I am not trustworthy.
No one said anything like that. He clenched his jaw. I don't think they've told anyone else.
Yet this Commander Sendez saw fit to inform you.
Only of the vague details, and only because we stumbled onto her ship.
They rescued you. They could have let you drown and keep their secrets, yet they saved you.
His blood chilled. She would have let them drown.
I want you to find out everything you can about these ships.
I don't think that will be easy, Therian cautioned.
Who is to say my sister won't use them against me?
She rules the oceans. I doubt she wants one stupid river. But Therian said, that didn't seem to be on anyone's mind.
Perhaps not now, but I wouldn't put it past her.
He refrained from telling her she was being paranoid. Instead, he tried his best weapon, diverting her attention. Shall I continue hunting for Emil Renast? The River Queen eyed him.
Why wouldn't you?
He tried to hide his relief that she'd pivoted with him, even though he knew she'd return to the subject of the Ocean Queen's ships soon enough. Even with the ammo and mech suit prototype destroyed, Pippa Spetsos just became a lot more powerful. Her position in Ophion has changed. Capturing her, interrogating her. We do that, and we risk having Ophion deem us enemies.
I do not care what Ophion deems us, but very well.
She motioned to the surface.
Go above. Find another way to collect the boy.
As you will it, he said, bowing in the current. She flicked a hand in dismissal.
I shall make your excuses to my daughter.
Give her my love. She didn't answer, and Therian made a beeline to the surface and open world above. He'd finished tugging on the clothes he'd left in a nook of the quay near Moonwood's river gate when wings rustled on the walkway above him. He peered over the stone rim to find Athalar standing with crossed arms.
We need to talk, said the Umbra Mortis.
Rune stared at the Witch Queen, at his bride. Hypaxia Enador was as beautiful as he remembered, luxurious, dark hair falling in soft curls down to her slim waist, brown skin that glowed as if moonlight ran beneath it, large dark eyes that noticed too much. Her mouth, full and inviting, parted in a lovely smile as she stepped into the foyer. The witch touched a knot in the wood on her broom. It was a stunning piece of art, every inch of its handle carved with intricate designs of clouds and flowers and stars, each twig in the base carved as well, and bound together with golden thread. But with the touch on that knot, the broom vanished. No, it shrank into a golden brooch of Chthona, the earth goddess ripe with child. Hypaxia pinned the brooch onto the shoulder of her gauzy blue robes and said,
A convenient bit of witch magic. I found that carrying a broom around the city is cumbersome and attracts the notice of many, especially a broom such as mine.
That is really fucking cool, Rune admitted. She began to answer, but her eyes slid to the dragon sitting at the foot of the stairs, and she stopped. She blinked once more before turning to Rune.
A friend?
Yeah, Rune lied. And then Flynn and Declan and Ethan were there, sprites in tow, gawking at the queen. Ethan cleared his throat, likely at the stunning beauty of the witch. Rune hadn't been much better when he'd first seen her, yet she'd hardly given him the time of day at the summit, even if she'd helped out majorly during the shit that had gone down in this city, had been willing to fly here to help save its citizens and Bryce. Rune straightened, remembering himself, that he was a prince and owed her the respect due to her rank. He bowed deeply.
Welcome, Your Majesty.
Flynn smirked, and Rune threw him a warning glare as he rose.
Allow me to introduce my companions. Tristan Flynn, Lord Hawthorne.
Flynn sketched an irreverent bow, a mockery of the one Rune had made.
Declan Emmett, super genius.
Dec grinned, bowing with more gravitas. They'd both been at the summit when Rune had formally met Hypaxia, as a queen, and not the Medwitch he'd believed her to be, but had never officially been presented to her.
Ethan Holstrom, Wolf, Rune continued.
Ethan gave him a look as if to say, Really, asshole? But Rune moved on to the sprites, the dragon,
and, our guests.
Hypaxia gave the dragon another wary glance. Flynn stepped forward, slinging an arm around Hypaxia's shoulders.
Welcome. Let's talk about all those times Rune tried to talk to you at the summit and you ignored him.
Declan chuckled, taking up a position at Hypaxia's other side. She furrowed her brow, as if the two males spoke another language entirely. The queen seemed to note the details of his house as she was escorted to the sectional. His disgusting beer-soaked house. Solas, a half-smoked mirthroot blunt sat in the ashtray on the coffee table a mere foot from Hypaxia. Rune said to Ethan,
Get that fucking mirthroot out of here.
Ethan lunged for it.
Not right now, when she's not looking.
Ethan caught himself with that sunball player's grace and relaxed against the cushions as Hypaxia sat, nestled between Flynn and Declan. If Ethan had to pick one word to describe the queen's expression, it would have been baffled, utterly baffled. Rune rubbed his neck, approaching the couch.
So, good to see you.
Hypaxia smiled in that wise, knowing way. Fucking hell, she was lovely. But her voice darkened as she said,
I'd like to have a word with you. Alone.
Ethan rose, subtly swiping the mirth root from the table. Room's yours. We'll be upstairs. Flynn opened his mouth, presumably to say something mortifying, but Ethan grabbed him by the shoulder and hauled him up, shoving the mirth root into the Lord's hands. The sprites fell into line behind them as Declan joined the fray, and then they were all gone, Ariadne stalking up the stairs after them. Rune had no doubt they'd try to eavesdrop. He took a seat on the stained, reeking couch, reining in his cringe as Hypaxia adjusted the folds of her blue robes. So, how are you? Hypaxia angled her head. She didn't wear her crown of cloudberries, but every line of her radiated grace and calm and care. She was about 50 years younger than he was, yet he felt like a whelp in front of her. Had she known her fiancé lived in a place like this, had a lifestyle like this?
I wanted to ask you for a favor.
Rune stilled. She went on.
I've come to Lunathian for the mating celebration in a few weeks. I'll be staying at the Witch's Embassy. But,
she twisted her hands, the first sign of doubt he'd ever seen from her.
I was wondering if you might spare me an escort.
Why? I mean, sure, yes, but everything okay? She didn't answer. Rune asked, what about your coven? They should protect their queen at any cost. Her long lashes bobbed.
They were my mother's coven. It was one of her last wishes that I inherit them, rather than select my own.
So you don't like them?
I don't trust them,
Rune considered. You want me to give you an escort to protect you from your own coven? Her mouth tightened.
You think I'm mad?
I thought witches lived and died for their loyalty.
The loyalty of these witches began and ended with my mother. She raised me in isolation, from the world, but also from them. My tutors were unconventional.
It was the most they'd ever spoken to each other. Rune asked, in what way?
They were dead.
A chill went down his spine. Right. Necromancer stuff, huh?
Enidors can raise the dead, yes. My mother summoned 3 ancient wise spirits to teach me. One for battle and physical training, one for mathematics and sciences, and the other for history, reading, and languages. She oversaw my magical training herself, especially the healing.
And this freaked her coven out?
It estranged us. My only companions while growing up were the dead. When my mother passed, I found myself surrounded by strangers.
And they found themselves with a queen whose unorthodox education unnerved them, whose gifts of necromancy unnerved them further. But you're the last Enidor. Who would they replace you with?
My sister.
Rune blinked. The Hind?
Lydia has no witch gifts, so she would be a figurehead. She'd wear the crown, but my mother's general, Morganthia, would rule.
That's insane.
Lydia was born first. She is the spitting image of my mother.
Hypaxia's father must have passed along the genes for her darker coloring then.
Even while I was growing up, I sometimes heard whispers from my mother's coven wondering if perhaps Lydia should not have been given away.
Why?
Because they're more comfortable with a half-shifter than a half-necromancer. They fear the influence of the House of Flame and Shadow, though I have sworn no vows to any but earth and blood. But Lydia is earth and blood, through and through, exactly as they are. They loved my mother, I have no doubt, but they have different plans for the future than she did. That became apparent by the end.
What sort of plans?
A closer bond with the Asteri, even at the cost of our relative autonomy.
Ah. That was a potential minefield, especially considering the shit that he was doing for Ophion, or had been doing for them. He had no idea where they stood now, after Aedra. Hypaxia went on.
Your kindness is why I've come here. I know you to be a male of bravery and dedication. While I'm in this city for the governor's celebration, especially with Lydia in town, I fear my mother's coven might make a move. They presented a unified front with me at the summit, but the last few months have been strained.
And since we're technically engaged, it won't be seen as a declaration of your distrust if I send one of my people to look after you. It'll be deemed some protective male bullshit.
Her lips twitched. Yes, something like that.
All right, no problem.
She swallowed, bowing her head. Thank you.
He dared to touch her hand, her skin velvety smooth.
We'll take care of this. Don't worry.
She patted his hand in a thanks, friend, sort of way. Rune cleared his throat, glancing at the ceiling, the distinctive worrisome thumping coming from it. Since you were raised by ghosts, I'm hoping you won't mind having a bit of an unorthodox guard. Her brows rose. Rune smiled. How do you feel about sunball players?
No one bothered them, but plenty of people stared as Therian and Hunt meandered through the ornate water garden, along the river in Moonwood, 100 rainbows glimmering in the mists around them. Therian loved this part of the city, though the old square's grit still called to him.
So, what's up?
Therian said, as Athalar paused beneath a towering elm, its leaves shimmering in the spray from a massive fountain of Ogenis lounging in an oyster shell. The angel pulled his phone from a hidden pocket in his battle suit.
I had a meeting with the governor.
His fingers flew over the phone, presumably summoning whatever the information was. He handed it to Therian.
She had me go over some of the latest demon reports from Nenya. I wanted to pass them along to the Blue Court.
Therian took the phone and scrolled through the photos. Anything interesting?
That one. The tail, just out of the shot here.
Hunt pointed to the picture, face stony.
It's a death stalker.
Even the burbling fountain beyond them seemed to quiet at the name.
What's that?
Lethal assassins bred by the Prince of the Pit. He keeps them as pets.
Athalar's wings rustled. Had a shadow passed over the sun?
I've only dealt with them once. I've got a scar down my back from it.
If the encounter had left Athalar scarred, Kathona spare them all.
One was in Nenya?
3 days ago.
Shit, where did it go?
No idea. Report says there's been no breach of Nenya's borders. Tell your people to be alert. Warn your queen, too.
I will.
Therian glanced sidelong at the angel, noticed that they weren't near cameras or other people.
Any further updates?
Therian asked carefully.
Maybe,
Hunt said.
I thought so,
Therian said. The warning about the demons seemed true, but also a convenient cover.
I know where Emile is,
Athalar said quietly. Therian nearly stumbled a step.
Where? Can't say, but he's safe.
Athalar remained grave despite the beauty of Moonwood around them.
Call off your search. Spin some bullshit to your queen. But you're done hunting for that kid.
Therian surveyed the angel, the mist beating on the gray wings.
And you think it's wise to tell me that you know where he is?
Hunt bared his teeth in a feral smile.
You going to torture it out of me, Kettos?
The thought had crossed my mind.
Lightning licked across Hunt's forehead as he motioned to the fountains, the water all around.
Not the best place for a lightning fight.
Therian began to pace.
The River Queen won't give up.
She wants that kid. It's a dead end, and a gigantic waste of your time.
Therian arched a brow. Hunt said, voice low,
Emile Renast has no powers. His sister staged things to make it seem that way, hoping that arrogant Vaynir like us would find the kid important enough to look after.
Something glimmered in Athalar's face that Therian couldn't place. Pain. Sorrow. Shame?
And I'm supposed to take your word for it,
Therian said.
Yeah, you are.
Therian knew that tone, the merciless voice of the Umbra Mortis.
I can think of only one person who'd make you this intense,
Therian drawled, unable to resist.
Legs knows where the kid is too, huh?
He laughed to himself.
Did she arrange this? I should have seen that coming.
He chuckled again, shaking his head.
What's to stop me from going to ask her some questions?
Hard to ask Bryce any questions when you don't have a head attached to your body,
Hunt said, violence glittering in his eyes. Therian held up his hands.
Threat received.
But his mind spun with all he'd learned.
Let's say I do trust you.
Emil really has no powers. Not even a drop.
He might be descended from a thunderbird, but Sophie was the only one with the gifts.
Fuck. The River Queen would be livid, even if she'd been the one who'd ordered him to spend weeks on a wild goose chase. Hell, she'd be pissed that he hadn't figured out the truth sooner.
And the intel?
Kid knows nothing.
Hunt seemed to consider, then added,
He confirmed that Danica and Sophie had contact, but nothing else.
Therian dragged his hands through his still wet hair.
Fuck,
he said again, pacing a step. Athalar tucked in his wings.
How badly is she going to punish you for this?
Therian swallowed. I'm going to have to spin it carefully.
Even though none of it is your fault?
She'll deem it a failure. Rational thinking is second to her need to feel like she's won.
I really am sorry.
The angel tilted his head to the side.
Any chance she'll fire you and let that be that?
Therian let out a humorless laugh.
I wish, but...
He paused, an idea sparking. He glanced up and down the sun-baked concrete quay.
Who says she has to know today?
A corner of Athalar's mouth kicked up.
As far as I know, you and I met to swap status reports.
Therian began walking toward the city proper, the hustle and bustle that set his blood thrumming. Athalar fell into step beside him.
It could take days to learn that Emil isn't worth our time.
Weeks.
The angel winked.
Months, if you do it right.
Therian grinned, a thrill shooting through his bones as they entered Moonwood's tree-lined streets. It was a dangerous game, but he'd play it. Milk every second of freedom he could from this. Stay above as often as he liked, so long as he checked in below every now and then.
Got any ideas where I can crash?
Chapter 53. Ethan didn't think of himself as an eavesdropper, but sometimes he couldn't help it if his keen wolf's hearing picked up stuff being said, even a floor below. This time, it had been some big, big stuff. Ethan used all his training, all those years of practice and games, to keep from pacing as Rune went on and on about the Witch Queen needing an escort in the city. Yes, fine, he'd do it. He'd guard her back. But...
You may speak, Ethan Holstrom,
the stunningly beautiful witch said, cutting off Rune, who blinked at them. Ethan hadn't realized he'd broadcast his impatience so clearly. Flynn and Declan had remained upstairs with the sprites and Ariadne, booing when Rune had asked only Ethan to come downstairs. Ethan cleared his throat.
You can talk to the dead, right? You're a necromancer?
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it over here.
He offered Rune an apologetic look, too, but at Hypaxia's cautious nod, he pressed on.
If I agree to guard you, would you...
Ethan shook his head.
Would you try to make contact with my brother, Connor?
For a long moment, Hypaxia only stared at him. Her dark eyes beheld everything. Too much.
I can feel the disturbance in your heart, Ethan. You don't wish to speak to him merely from longing and loss.
No. I mean, yeah, I miss him like crazy, but...
He paused. Could they tell her everything Bryce had learned? Rune spared him the effort of deciding and said,
Do you know what happens to the dead after they've been in the bone quarter for a while? Her face paled.
You learned of the second light.
Yeah, Rune said, lip ring glinting. Ethan is pretty worried about what happened to his brother in the pack of devils, especially after they helped my sister. If you've got any ability to learn what's happened to Connor Holstrom, or to warn him, even if it's to no avail, we'd appreciate it. But Ethan will gladly escort you either way you choose. Ethan tried not to appear too grateful. He'd spent years thinking Rune was a dick, mostly thanks to Bryce and Danica constantly dissing him, but
this guy had let him into his house, trusted him with his secrets, and now seemed intent on helping him.
He wondered if the Fae knew how lucky they were. Hypaxia nodded sagely.
There is a ritual I could perform. It'd need to be on the autumnal equinox, though.
When the veil between realms is thinnest, Rune said.
Yes.
Hypaxia smiled sadly at Ethan.
I'm sorry for your loss, and that you've learned the truth.
How do you know the truth? Ethan asked.
The dead have little reason to lie.
Ice skittered down Ethan's spine. I see. The chandelier rattled above. Rune rubbed at his face, the tattoos on his arm shifting with the movement. He lowered his hand and looked at the Witch Queen, his fiancée, lucky male. You cool with a dragon joining you? The prince asked Hypaxia.
That dragon?
Hypaxia peered at the ceiling. A lawyer friend of mine says I need a royal, official reason to commandeer someone else's slave. A very important, powerful slave. Protecting my fiancé is about as important as it gets. Hypaxia's lips curled, though doubt kindled in her dark eyes. That made two of them. She asked Ethan,
How do you feel about it?
Ethan gave her a half smile, flattered that she'd even asked. If you can contact my brother on the equinox, then it doesn't really matter what I feel.
Of course it does, she said,
and sounded like she meant it. A few weeks until the equinox, and then he could see Connor again, even if it was just one last time. Even if it was only to deliver a warning that might do him no good. Bryce might have avoided going home for as long as possible, might have stayed at the archives right until closing, and been one of the last people exiting the building as night fell. She'd made it down the sweeping marble steps, breathing in the dry, warm night air, when she saw him. Hunt leaned against a car across the narrow street, wings folded elegantly. People hurrying home from work gave him a wide berth. Some outright crossed the street to avoid him. He'd worn his hat, that fucking sunball hat she couldn't resist. Quinlan? He pushed off the car and approached her, where she'd halted at the foot of the stairs. She lifted her chin. Athalar? He huffed a soft laugh. So that's how it's gonna go, huh?
What do you want?
They'd had little fights over the months, but nothing this important. He waved a hand to the building looming behind her. I need to use the archives to look something up. I didn't want to disturb you during work hours. She jabbed a thumb at the building, now beautifully illuminated against the starry night.
You waited too long. The building is closed.
I didn't realize you'd hide inside until closing. Avoiding something, Quinlan? He smiled savagely as she bristled. But you're good at sweet-talking people into doing your bidding. Getting us in will be a walk in the park, won't it? She didn't bother to look pleasant, though she pivoted and began marching back up the steps, heels clacking on the stone.
What do you need?
He gestured to the cameras mounted on the massive pillars of the entrance. I'll explain inside.
So you think Hell's planning something?
Bryce asked 2 hours later, when she found Hunt where she'd left him, the massive expanse of the archives quiet around them. There had been no need to sweet-talk her way in after all. She'd discovered another perk to working here, getting to use this place after hours, alone, not even a librarian to monitor them. They'd gotten past the security guards with barely a word, and her boss wouldn't show up until night was fully overhead. Not for at least another hour. Hunt had said he needed to peruse some newly translated Fae texts on ancient demons, so she'd gotten him set up at a table in the atrium, and then gone back to her office on the other side of the floor.
"The demons in the reports Celestina gave me are bad news," Hunt said.
He was working at the desk, sunball hat bright in the moonlight streaming through the glass ceiling.
"Some of the worst of the pit. All rare, all lethal. The last time I saw so many clustered together was during the attack this spring."
Bryce slid into the chair across from him. Was he going to ignore what happened earlier? That wouldn't do. Not at all. She casually extended her foot beneath the table, drifted it up Hunt's muscled leg. "And now they need the big, tough angel to dispatch them back to hell." He slammed his legs together, trapping her foot. His eyes lifted to hers. Lightning sparked there.
"If Adis or the Prince of the Pit is planning something, this is probably the first hint."
"Aside from them literally saying that Hell's armies are waiting for me?" Hunt squeezed her foot harder, those powerful thigh muscles shifting.
"Aside from that. But I can't tell Celestina about that shit without raising questions about Hell's interest in you, so I need to find a way to warn her with the intel she gave me."
Bryce studied her mate and considered the way he'd spoken of the Archangel. "You like Celestina, huh?"
"Tentatively."
His shoulders were tight, though. He explained,
"I might like her, but the Harpy blood-eagled two Ophian rebels today. Celestina allowed that shit to go down here."
Bryce had seen the news coverage of it already. It had been enough to turn her stomach. She said, "So you'll play faithful Triari, get her info on the demons, and then..."
"I don't know."
He released her foot. She traced her toes over his knee.
"Stop it. I can't think if you're doing that."
"Good."
"Quinlan."
His voice dropped low. She bit her lip. But Hunt said softly,
"Any word from Fury?"
"Yeah. Package was delivered safe and sound." She could only pray her mom wasn't showing Emil her weird babies and plants sculptures.
"Therion's off the hunt,"
Hunt said. She stiffened.
"You told him?"
"Not the details. Only that the search isn't worth his time, and he won't find what he's seeking."
"And you trust him?" His voice went quieter.
"I do."
He returned to the documents he'd been poring over. Bryce graced her toes over his other knee, but he clapped a hand on top of her foot, halting its progress.
"If Hell's amassing armies, then these demons must be the vanguard, coming to test the defenses around Nenya."
"But they'd need to find a way to open the Northern Rift entirely."
"Yeah."
He eyed Bryce.
"Maybe Adis has been buttering you up for that."
Bryce's blood chilled.
"Cathona, spare me."
He frowned.
"Don't think for one moment that Adis and the Prince of the Pit have forgotten the horn in your back, that Thanatos didn't have it in mind when you spoke to him."
She rubbed at her temple.
"Maybe I should cut it out of my skin and burn it."
He grimaced.
"That's a real turn-on, Quinlan."
"Were you getting turned on?" She wiggled her toes beneath his hand.
"I couldn't tell."
He gave her a half-smile. Finally, a crack in that pissed-off exterior.
"I was waiting to see how high your foot was going to get."
Her core heated.
"Then why'd you stop me?"
"I thought you'd like a little challenge."
She bit her lip again.
"There was an interesting book in those stacks over there."
She inclined her head to the darkness behind them.
"Maybe we should check it out."
His eyes simmered.
"Might be useful."
"Definitely useful."
She rose from the desk and strode into the dimness, deep enough into the stacks that none of the cameras in the atrium where they'd been sitting could pick them up. Hands wrapped around her waist from behind, and Hunt pressed against her.
"You drive me fucking crazy, you know that."
"And you're a domineering alpha hole, you know that?"
"I'm not domineering."
He nibbled at her ear.
But you'll admit you're an alpha hole.
His fingers dug into her hips, tugging her back against him. The hardness there.
You want me to fuck it out, then?
Are you still mad at me?
He sighed, his breath hot against her neck.
Bryce, I need to process everything.
She didn't turn around.
And?
He kissed under her ear.
And? I'm sorry for how I acted earlier.
She didn't know why her eyes stung.
I wanted to tell you. I really did.
His hands began to rove up her torso, loving and gentle. She arched against him, exposing her neck.
I understand why you didn't.
He dragged his tongue up her throat.
I was upset that you didn't trust me. I thought we were a team. It rattled me.
She made to turn around at that, but his hands tightened, holding her in place. So she said,
"We are a team. But I wasn't sure if you'd agree with me, that an ordinary human boy was worth the risk."
He let her twist in his arms this time, and, shit, his eyes were wounded. His voice hoarsened.
"Of course I would have thought a human was worth the risk. I was too wrapped up in other shit to see the whole picture."
"I'm sorry I didn't give you enough credit,"
she cupped his face.
"Hunt, I'm really sorry."
Maybe she'd fucked up by not telling him, not trusting him. She regretted that the Viper Queen had killed those people, but she'd be damned if she felt bad about how things had ended up. Hunt turned his head, kissing her palm.
"I still don't understand how you pieced it all together. Not just Sophie lying about Emile's powers, but how you knew the Viper Queen would be able to find him."
"She's got an arsenal of spies and trackers. I figured she was one of the few people in this city who could do it. Especially if she was motivated enough by the idea that Emile had powers that could be useful to her. And especially when his trail was picked up in the marshes."
He shook his head.
"Why?"
"She's a queen of snakes and reptiles. I know she can communicate with them on some freaky, psychic level. And guess what the marshes are full of?"
Hunt swallowed hard. "Sobex."
Bryce nodded. He hooked a strand of her hair behind her ear, kissed its pointy tip. Forgiveness that she hadn't realized she needed filled the gesture. Hunt asked softly,
"What about the others? Are you going to tell them?"
She slowly shook her head.
"No. You and Fury and Juniper are the only ones who will ever know."
"Not even Rune."
"And your parents."
"I meant the other people in this city, currently doing shady shit." He kissed her temple.
"I can't believe your mom didn't freak out and drag you home."
"Oh, she wanted to. I think Randall had to stage an intervention."
"Don't take this the wrong way, but why Nidaros?"
"It's the safest and best place I can think of. He'll be protected there, hidden. The local sun priest owes Randall a favor and is having all the relevant documents forged. My parents? They weren't able to have a kid of their own. I mean, other than me. So even though my mom was freaked as fuck about the whole rebel thing, she's already gone crazy decorating a room for Emile."
"Emile, who is not Emile anymore."
His smile lit something iridescent in her chest.
"Yeah," she said, unable to stop her answering smile. "Cooper Sulago, my half-brother."
He studied her, though.
"How'd you manage to communicate about it?"
"There was no way she or her parents would have ever risked discussing this over email or phone." She smiled slightly.
"Postcards."
Hunt choked on a laugh.
"That was all a lie?"
"No. I mean, my mom sent me the postcard after our fight, but when I wrote back, I used a code that Randall taught me in case of emergencies."
"The joys of a warrior for a parent."
She chuckled. "Yeah. So, we've been swapping postcards about this for the past 2 weeks. To anyone else, it would have seemed like we were talking about sports and the weather and my mom's weird baby sculptures. But that's why Emile stayed at the Viper Queen's for so long.
Sending postcards back and forth isn't the fastest method of communication.
But it's one of the more brilliant ones.
Hunt kissed her brow, wings curling around them.
I love you. You're crazy and shady as all hell, but I love you. I love that you did this for that kid.
Her smile widened. Glad to impress, Athalar. His hands began drifting down her sides, thumbs stroking over her ribs.
I've been aching for you all day, aching to show you how sorry I am, and how much I fucking love you.
All is forgiven. She grabbed one of his hands, dragging it down her front, along her thigh, and up under her dress.
I've been wet for hours,
she whispered, as his fingers brushed her soaked underwear. He growled, teeth grazing her shoulder.
All this just for me?
Always for you. Bryce turned again and rubbed her ass against him, feeling the hard, proud length of his cock jutting against her. Hunt hissed, and his fingers slipped beneath her underwear, circling her clit.
You want me to fuck you right here, Quinlan?
Her toes curled in her heels. She curved back against him, and his other hand went up to her breast, sliding beneath her neckline to cup the aching flesh beneath.
Yes, right now.
He nipped at her ear, drawing a gasp as his fingers slid down to her entrance, dipping in.
Say please,
he breathed. She arched, moaning softly, and he hushed her.
Please,
she gasped. She trembled with anticipation at the click of his belt buckle, the zip of his pants, shivered as he set her hands upon the nearest shelf and gently bent her over, then slid her dress up her thighs, exposed her ass to the cool air.
God's damn,
Hunt breathed, running his hands over her rear. Bryce writhed. He hooked his fingers in her underwear, sliding the lace down her thighs, letting them fall between her ankles. She stepped out of them, spreading her legs wide in invitation. But Hunt dropped to his knees behind her, and before Bryce could inhale, his tongue was at her sex, lapping and dipping inside. She moaned again, and he gripped her thighs, holding her in place as he feasted on her. His wings brushed her ass, her hips, as he leaned forward, tasting and suckling and...
I'm going to come if you keep doing that,
she rasped.
Good,
he growled against her, and as he slid two fingers into her, she did exactly that. She bit her lip to keep from crying out, and he licked her, drawing out each ripple of her climax. She panted, dizzy with pleasure, clinging to the shelf as he rose behind her once more.
Now be very quiet,
he whispered in her ear and pushed inside her. From behind, at this angle, the fit was luxuriously tight and deep. As he had last night, Hunt eased his way into her with care, and she gritted her teeth to keep from groaning at each inch he claimed for himself. He stilled when he was fully seated, her ass pressed entirely against his front, and ran a possessive hand down her spine. The fullness of him, the size, simply smelling him and knowing it was Hunt inside her, release threatened again, bigger and mightier than before. Her star began to glow, silvering the shelves, the books, the darkness of the stacks.
You like that?
He withdrew nearly to the tip before pushing back in. She buried her face against the hard shelf to stay quiet.
You like how my cock feels in you?
She could only get out a garbled, yes, I do, please, more. Hunt laughed, dark and rich, and thrust in, a little harder this time.
I love you undone like this,
he said, moving again, setting the pace,
utterly at my mercy.
Yes, 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 she hissed, and he laughed again, his balls slapped against her ass.
You know how much I thought about doing this all those months ago,
he said, bending to press a kiss to her neck. Likewise, she managed to say. I wanted you to fuck me on my desk at the gallery. His thrusts turned a little uneven.
Oh, yeah?
She moved her hips back against him, angling him in deeper. He groaned now. She whispered,
I knew you'd feel like this. So fucking perfect.
His fingers dug into her hips.
All yours, sweetheart. Every piece of me. He thrust harder, faster.
Gods, I love you,
she breathed, and that was his undoing. Hunt yanked her from the shelf, pulling her to the ground with him, positioning her on all fours. His knees spread her own even wider, and Bryce bit her hand to hold in her scream of pleasure as he rammed into her, over and over and over.
I fucking love you,
he said, and Bryce cracked. Light exploded from her as she came, driving back onto his cock, so deep he touched her innermost wall. Hunt shouted, and his cock pulsed in her, following her into that blinding pleasure like he couldn't stop, like he'd keep spilling into her forever. But then he stilled, and they remained there, panting, Hunt buried in her.
No teleporting this time, huh?
He said, bending to kiss her neck. She leaned her forehead against her hands.
Must need your power to join mine, or something, she mumbled. Good thing you didn't do that, though. Probably would have burned the building down. But I don't care right now.
She wiggled her ass against him, and he hissed. Let's go home and have more makeup sex.
Night.
Rune opened his eyes, finding himself on the couch on the bridge, with Daybright seated across from him.
Hey,
he said. He'd passed out on the sectional while Declan and Ethan argued about sunball crap. Flynn had been busy fucking a nymph upstairs. Ariadne and the Sprites had claimed Declan's bedroom, as the male had planned to spend the night at Mark's, and gone to sleep soon after a painfully awkward evening meal. The dragon had picked at her dinner like she'd never seen food before. The Sprites had drunk an entire bottle of wine between them and spent the meal burping up embers. How any of them were sleeping with Flynn's escapades down the hall was beyond Rune. Day drummed a flaming hand on the rolled arm of the fainting couch.
I have information for you to pass along.
Rune straightened.
Good or bad?
That's for you to decide.
She watched him intently. He wasn't sure if he'd see her after that colossal bit of weirdness last night, but she said nothing of it as she declared.
I have it on good authority that Pippa Spetsos is planning something big in retaliation for losing so much ammunition and the Imperial mech suit prototype. Ophion is fully behind her. They believe the unit that sabotaged the shipment has gone rogue, and appointed Spetsos to send a clear message to both those rebels and the Empire.
Rune kept his face carefully blank.
What's she up to? Where?
I'm not sure, but given that her last known location was Idra, I thought you should pass it along to your cohorts in Crescent City, lest she attack there.
Do the Asteri know about her plans?
No, only I do.
How'd you learn about them?
That's none of your concern.
Rune studied her.
So, we're back to the distance. No more bedtime stories.
Again, she drummed her fingers.
Let's chalk that up to a moment of insanity.
I didn't see anything.
But you wanted to.
I don't need to. I don't give a shit what you look like. I like talking to you.
Why?
Because I feel like I can be real with you here.
Real?
Yeah, honest. I've told you shit no one else knows.
I don't see why.
He rose from his couch and crossed to hers. He leaned against the arm of the sofa, peering down at her blazing face.
See, I think you like me too.
She shot to her feet, and he backed away a step. She came closer, though, near enough for her chest to brush his. Flame and darkness twined, stars turning into embers between them.
This is not some game where you can flirt and seduce your way through it, she hissed. This is war, and one that will claim many more lives before it is through.
A growl worked its way up his throat.
Don't patronize me. I know the cost.
You know nothing of cost or of sacrifice.
Don't I? I might not have been playing rebel all my life, but believe me, shit has never been easy.
Her words had found their mark, though.
So your father doesn't like you. You're not the only one.
So your father beat you and burned you. So did mine. Rune snarled, getting in her face.
What the fuck is your point?
She snarled right back. My point is that if you are not careful, if you are not smart, you will find yourself giving up pieces of your soul before it's too late. You will wind up dead.
And?
She stilled. How can you ask that so cavalierly?
He shrugged. I'm nobody, he said.
It was the truth. Everything he was, the worth by which the world defined him, it had all been given to him, by pure luck of being born into the right family. If he'd done anything of value, it had been through the ox. But as a prince, he'd been running his entire life from that title, knew it to be utterly hollow. And Bryce had kept her power a secret so he might hold on to that scrap of specialness. Rune turned away from Day, disgusted with himself. Bryce loved him far more than she hated their father, had given up privilege and power for him. What had he ever done for anyone on that scale? He'd die for his friends, the city, yeah, but who the fuck was he, deep down? Not a king. His father wasn't a fucking king either, not in the way that mattered.
Message received, he said to Day.
Night.
Rune opened his eyes. The living room was dark, the TV off, Ethan presumably long gone to sleep. Rune turned over on the couch, tucking his arms behind his head and staring at the ceiling, watching beams of headlights drift across it from passing cars. Who the fuck was he? Prince of nothing.
Chapter 54. Sitting in her office at the archives, phone at her ear, Bryce drained the last sips of her third coffee of the day and debated whether a fourth cup would have her crawling on the ceiling by lunchtime.
So, Cooper's good? She asked her mother, setting her coffee cup atop the paper that held the sequence of numbers and letters from Sophie's arm.
Randall had now deemed it safe enough to discuss the boy on the phone. Bryce supposed it'd be weird not to, since her parents had just publicly adopted the kid.
He's an exceptionally bright boy, Ember said, and Bryce could hear the smile in her voice. He appreciates my art.
Bryce sighed at the ceiling.
The surest test of intelligence out there. Do you know he hasn't been to school in more than 3 years?
Ember's voice sharpened.
3 years? That's awful. Has he, talked about his previous home?
Her mom caught her meaning.
No, he won't talk about it, and I'm not going to push. Millie Garkunos said to let him bring it up on his own time.
Millie Garkunos suddenly became a child psychiatrist.
Millie Garkunos is a good neighbor, Bryce Adelaide Quinlan.
Yeah, and a busybody. Don't tell her anything. Especially about this.
I wouldn't, Ember hissed.
Bryce nodded, even though her mom couldn't see through the phone.
Let the kid quietly adjust. Am I his caretaker, or are you, Bryce?
Put Randall on the phone. He's the voice of reason.
Randall is beside himself with happiness at having another child in the house, and is currently on a walk through the woods with Cooper, showing him the lay of the land.
Bryce smiled at that.
I loved doing that with him. Ember's voice softened. He loved doing that with you too.
Bryce sighed again.
Thanks again, Mom. I know this was a shock. I'm glad you included us, Bryce, and gave us this gift.
Bryce's throat ached.
Please be careful,
Ember whispered. I know you think I'm overbearing and annoying, but it's only because I want the best for you. I want you to be safe and happy.
I know, Mom.
Let's plan on a girls' weekend this winter, someplace nice and cold. Skiing? Neither of us skis.
We can learn, or sit by the fire and drink spiked hot chocolate.
Here was the mom she adored, the one she'd worshipped as a kid.
It's a plan.
A ripple of fire, of pure power, shuddered through the building. Silence flowed in its wake, the usual background noise halting.
I gotta get back to work, Bryce said quickly.
Okay,
Love you.
Love you, Bryce said, and had barely hung up when the Autumn King walked in.
Trash gets dumped in the back, she said without looking up.
I see your irreverence has not been altered by your new immortality.
Bryce lifted her head. This wasn't how she wanted to start her day. She'd already spent her walk to work with Rune, needing him to explain to her twice about the plan to have Queen Hypaxia escorted by Ethan and the dragon, in exchange for the Witch Queen contacting Connor's spirit on the equinox. She'd been slightly nauseated at that, but had grunted her approval before she left him on the street, telling him to give Hypaxia her number in case she needed anything. A few minutes later, Rune had forwarded the Queen's contact information. Her father sniffed her.
Would you like to explain to me why you have mated with Athalar when you are betrothed to a fey prince?
Because he's my mate?
I didn't know half-breeds could have such things.
She bared her teeth.
Real classy.
Fire filled his eyes.
Did you not consider that I arranged for your union with Cormac out of your best interests? The interests of your offspring?
You mean your best interests, as if I'd ever let you within 100 miles of any child of mine.
Cormac is powerful, his household strong. I want you in Avalon because it is a safe hold. Even the Asteri cannot pierce its mists without permission. So old is the magic that guards it.
Bryce stilled.
You're full of shit.
Am I? Did you not kill an archangel this spring? Are you not now at the mercy of the Asteri? Are demons not once more creeping through the Northern Rift in greater numbers than ever before?
Like you give a single fuck about my safety.
Flame rippled around him, then vanished.
I am your father, whether you like it or not.
You didn't seem to care about that until I surpassed you in power.
Things change. I found watching Micah harm you to be unsavory.
Must have really bothered you, since you've seemed to have no issue with harming others yourself.
Explain.
Oh, come on. Don't give me that blank fucking look. The last Starborn prince? You killed him because he was special and not you, and everyone knows it.
Her father threw back his head and laughed.
Is that what you think? That I killed my rival for spite?
She said nothing.
Is that what prompted you to hide your gift all these years? Concern that I'd do the same to you?
No. It was partly true. Her mother had been the one who'd thought that.
The Autumn King shook his head slowly and sat in the chair opposite her desk.
Ember fed you too many lies born of her irrational fears.
And what about the scar on her face? Was that a lie too, or an irrational fear?
I have already told you that I regret that more than you know, and that I loved Ember deeply.
I don't think you know what that word means.
Smoke curled from his shoulders.
At least I understand what it means to use my household name.
What?
Princess Bryce Dannon. That was the name you gave the governor, as well as the director of the Crescent City Ballet, isn't it? And what your lawyer, Mark, is it, called you in his letter to the astronomer, justifying the fact that you and your brother had commandeered 4 of his slaves.
So? Her father smiled faintly.
You purchased influence with my name. The royal name. You bought it, and there are no returns, I'm afraid.
Her blood went cold.
The legal paperwork for your official name change is already filed.
You fucking change my name, and I will kill you.
Starlight flared at her chest.
Threatening your king is punishable by death.
You will never be my king.
Oh, I am. You declared fealty by using my name, your title. It is done.
Rage surged through her, rendering her mute. He went on, enjoying every second of it.
I wonder how your mother shall react.
Bryce shot out of her chair, slamming her hands on the desk.
Light shimmered at her fingertips. Her father didn't so much as flinch. He looked at her hands, then her face, and said blandly,
"You are now officially a princess of the Fae. I expect you to act as such."
Her fingers curled on the desk, her long nails gouging the wood.
"You have no right."
"I have every right, and you had the right not to use your royal privileges, but you chose otherwise."
"I didn't know."
He couldn't get away with this. She'd call Mark immediately, see if he and his team could find some way out of it.
"Ignorance is no excuse,"
her father said, cold amusement frosting his face.
"You are now Bryce Adelaide Dannon."
Bile burned her throat. She'd never heard anything more hateful. She was Bryce Adelaide Quinlan. She'd never stop being a Quinlan, her mother's daughter. Her father continued,
"You will maintain appearances with Cormac for as long as I command you to."
He rose, glancing again at her hands, the lines she'd gouged in the desk thanks to that new veneer strength. His eyes narrowed.
"What is that number there?"
She flipped over the piece of paper on which she'd written the sequence of numbers and letters on Sophie's body, but despite her rage and disgust, she managed to ask,
"You know it?"
He scanned her face.
"I will admit to turning a blind eye to the recklessness of your brother, but I would think you, princess, would be more careful. The Asteri won't come to kill me first, or even Athalar. They'll go right to Nidaros."
Her stomach twisted. "I don't know what you're talking about." What did the sequence from Sophie's arm have to do with this? Had he known Sophie? She didn't dare ask. Her father stalked for her office door, graceful as a leopard. But he paused on the threshold, attention going to the star on her chest.
"I know what it is you're searching for. I've been seeking it for a long, long time."
"Oh," she sneered, "and what is that?" The Autumn King stepped into the dimness of the stacks.
"The truth."
Juniper didn't attend dance class that evening, and Madame Kira didn't so much as look at Bryce, though everyone else did. There were glares and whispers.
"So inappropriate.
What an entitled brat.
Can you imagine ever doing that to a friend?"
Bryce left class during the 5-minute break and didn't return. She found a bench in a quiet part of the Oracle's park and slumped onto the wooden slats, tugging her hat low over her face. She was a fucking princess. Yes, she'd been one before today, but... A folder full of documents had been delivered right before she'd gone to class. In it had been a new scooter registration, proof of name change, and a credit card. A sleek, black credit card with HRH Bryce Dannon stamped on the front. A long, golden leash stretched from it to her father, and his bank account. She'd shoved everything into a drawer in her desk and locked it.
How could she tell her mother? How could she tell Randall? She'd been so fucking stupid.
She wished Danica were with her. Wished June didn't hate her guts, that Fury wasn't hundreds of miles to the north. With her parents, who already had enough to deal with, without telling them about this spectacular fuck-up. And yeah, she knew if she called Hunt, he'd find her in 2 seconds, but she wanted to talk to another female, someone who might understand. She dialed before she could second-guess herself. 30 minutes later, Bryce waited at a pizza counter, nursing a beer, watching people begin to queue at the alley food stalls as night fell. The baking temperature with it. The Witch Queen entered so casually that Bryce might not have noticed if it hadn't been for Ethan's presence. He sat at one of the small tables in the alley, clad in an old sunball t-shirt and track pants, looking for all the world like a guy out to meet a friend. Except for the outline of the handgun tucked into the back of his waistband, the knife she knew was in his boot. No sign of the dragon, though, unless Ariadne was somewhere out of sight. Bryce said to Hypaxia, "Nice jeans." The witch peered down at herself,
the light green blouse, charcoal biker jacket, and tight black jeans, the sensible flats and pretty gold bracelet. A matching gold brooch of Kathona adorned the lapel of her jacket.
Thank you. Ethan suggested I blend in.
He's not wrong, Bryce said, glancing at the wolf sizing up every person on the street. She said to Hypaxia, order what you want, and we'll pay the tab when we leave. The witch strode the 10 feet to the display in the tiny shop, then quietly ordered. If the male behind the counter recognized her, he didn't let on. Hypaxia took a position at the counter overlooking the alley. Ethan lifted his brows high. She nodded. All was fine. Bryce said to her, he's pretty intense about the guard duty.
Very professional, Hypaxia said approvingly.
Bryce offered a friendly smile.
Thanks for coming. I know my call was super random. I had a crazy day and thought you might have some advice.
Hypaxia smiled at last.
I'm pleased you did. I've wished to see you since our encounter this spring.
When the queen had been playing Medwitch, and...
It all came rushing back.
Hypaxia had freed Hunt from the halo, had removed it, had given him the ability to slay Sandriel and come aid Bryce.
Thank you for what you did, Bryce said, throat tight, for helping Hunt.
Hypaxia's smile only widened.
From your scent, it seems as if you and he have made things permanent. Congratulations.
Bryce casually rocked back on her heels. Thank you.
And how's your thigh?
No more pain, also thanks to you.
I'm glad to hear it.
Bryce sipped from her beer as the server brought over the queen's pizza. She murmured to him, and the male brought the second slice out to Ethan, who grinned over at Hypaxia and held up the slice in a long-distance cheers.
Still no sign of the dragon. Maybe that was a good thing.
When Hypaxia had taken a bite, Bryce said,
so, the reason you asked me here.
Bryce sighed. Yeah. My father, the Autumn King, visited today. Said that because I used his name for a few things, it meant I had accepted my royal title. I tried to refuse, but he'd already done the paperwork. I'm now officially a princess. She almost choked on the last word.
Judging from your expression, this is not good news.
No. I know you're pretty much a stranger, and that you were born into your title and never had the choice to be normal, but I feel like I'm drowning here. A gentle, warm hand landed atop hers.
I am sorry that he did that to you.
Bryce studied a stain on the counter, unsure if she could look at the witch without crying. Hypaxia said,
why do you think I came here this spring? I wanted to be normal, if only for a few months. I know what you're feeling.
Bryce shook her head. Most people wouldn't get it. They'd think, oh, poor you, you have to be a princess.
But I've spent my entire life avoiding this male and his court. I hate him, and I just walked right into his clutches like a fucking idiot.
She heaved a shuddering breath.
I think Hunt's answer to all of this would be to go flambé my father until he reversed this bullshit, but... I wanted to see if you had any alternate ideas.
The queen took another bite of her pizza, contemplating.
While I might enjoy the sight of Hunt Athala flambéing the Autumn King,
Bryce's mouth quirked up at that.
I think you're right that a more diplomatic method is required. So you think there's a way out of this?
Mark had agreed to help, but hadn't sounded hopeful.
I think there are ways to manage this. Manage your father.
Bryce nodded. Rune mentioned you had some drama with your coven. A soft laugh.
I suppose that's a good way to put it.
He also mentioned that you had some unusual tutors growing up. Ghosts, he'd told her on the phone this morning.
Yes, my dearest friends.
No wonder you wanted to bust out and escape, if you had only the dead for company. Hypaxia chuckled.
They were wonderful companions, but yes. They encouraged me to come here, actually.
Are they with you on this trip?
No.
They cannot leave the confines of the keep where I was raised. My mother's summoning spell bound them there. It is... Perhaps it's the reason I returned to my homelands again.
Not to be queen?
That too, Hypaxia said quickly. But they are my family.
Along with the Hind, Bryce said carefully.
I do not count her as kin.
Bryce was grateful for the shift in their conversation, even for a few minutes. She needed time to sort through her raging feelings. You look nothing alike.
That is not why I don't consider her a sister.
No, I know that.
Our mother was as golden-haired and tanned-skinned as she. My father, however, I take after his coloring.
And who was the Hind's father?
A rich and powerful stag shifter in Pangera. My mother never told me the details of how they came to breed,
why she agreed to it,
but the Hind inherited her father's powers, not the witch gifts, and thus she was sent at age 3 to live with him.
That's horrible. When Bryce had been 3, her mother had fought nearly to the death to keep her from the Autumn King's clutches. Her mother had done all that, only for Bryce to wind up right here. Shame and dread filled her. She knew it was only a matter of time until her mom found out, but she couldn't tell her. Not yet.
It was part of their deal, Hypaxia explained. Whatever gift Lydia inherited, that was where she would live. She spent the first 3 years with my mother, but when the shifter gifts manifested, his kin came to claim her. My mother never saw her again.
Was your mom bothered by what she became?
I was not privy to those thoughts,
Hypaxia said tightly enough that Bryce knew to drop it.
But it has never sat well with me.
Are you going to see her while she's here?
Yes. I've never met her before. I was born several years after she was sent away.
Bryce drank again. I'd suggest not getting your hopes up.
I'm not. But we digress from your troubles, the queen sighed. I don't know Fey royal laws, so I'm afraid I can't tell you definitively, but... At this point, I think the only ones who might be able to stop your father are the Asteri.
I was afraid of that, Bryce rubbed her temples. Just wait until Hunt hears.
He won't be pleased?
Why the hell would he be pleased?
Because you are mated, and now your father has made you a princess, which makes him...
Oh, gods, Bryce said, choking. Hunt is a fucking prince, she laughed bitterly. He's going to go ballistic. He'll hate it even more than I do. She laughed again, a bit hysterically. Sorry, I'm like literally imagining his face when I tell him tonight. I need to record it or something.
I can't tell if this is a good or bad thing.
Both. The Autumn King expects me to keep up my engagement with Prince Cormac.
Even though your scent makes it clear you're...